defenders, your big takeaway here is user education. If you're in parts of the world that are suffering geopolitical conflicts, but you're not in the country involved in the geopolitical conflict, which means you are adjacent to them, it's going to be a hot topic. Educate your users, right? Educate your users. Hey, adversaries like to use modern events as lures, so watch out.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast, weekly Intel chat. My name is Christopher Luft. I'm one of the co-founders of Lima Charlie, and I will be your host. Joining me today to break down the cybersecurity news being shared by the awesome InfoSec community is the one and only Matt Bromley. And don't forget, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations. Think of it as a backend for your MSSP, where everything is built API first. Scale with ease and confidence as your business grows. You can start today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it.
Mr. Bromley, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, Chris, I'm doing well, man. How are you doing? Happy, I guess it's the second week of March that we're in right now, but still, happy March.
Spring's coming. Spring's coming.
That's what they say. Texas, it's already pushing 75, 80 degrees every day. So I got nothing but sunshine here.
Awesome. I got to be honest, I'm a little bit nervous. I'm heading to Regina next week to give a talk at one of the B-sides there on agentic SecOps. It's the power grid for the cybersecurity future. Very excited
awesome,
about
man.
It, but a little nervous because I've been to a few B-sides that end up being much larger than I anticipated, and I've never done any like full-size like hall talk, so maybe you got some pointers for me.
I know this podcast, there's these two guys, they talk every week. They're pretty comfortable going back and forth. I would recommend listening to them for what not to do. And
right.
then just do the opposite of that. No, I'm sure you'll have fun. For anyone who's listening, if you're going to find yourself out there, please go check out Chris's talk, not to increase the pressure, but to give him some love and support.
Yeah, I think this will probably be published around the same time too, a couple days ahead. So wish me luck. And I might check out, there's a MetaQuest app apparently that is like you can practice talking in front of a big hall full of people. So I'll give it a shot. Yeah.
I didn't know such a thing existed. That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. I was putting together the notes for this one and I kind of picked a theme and I'm going to call this the shit is getting real episode. So.
All right, then. In that case, let me adjust my hat and turn my coffee mug around. Let's get real.
All right. So the White House released President Trump's cyber strategy for America, outlining a national framework to strengthen both defensive and offensive cybersecurity capabilities. The strategy emphasizes stronger coordination between government and the private sector, along with increased investment in advanced technologies. The document presents six policy pillars intended to guide future cybersecurity policy and funding. These pillars focus on deterring cyber adversaries, modernizing federal systems, protecting critical infrastructure, strengthening regulatory approaches, advancing emerging technologies, and expanding the cybersecurity workforce. One pillar focuses on shaping adversary behavior by increasing the cost and risk for nation-state and criminal cyber actors. The strategy calls for using the full range of U.S. cyber capabilities to deter and disrupt threats while partnering with allies and private sector organizations to dismantle malicious infrastructure. It also targets cybercrime ecosystems, intellectual property theft, and surveillance technologies used by authoritarian governments, with a commitment to impose consequences on those responsible for cyber attacks against U.S. systems. Another pillar addresses modernization of federal government networks. The administration proposes accelerating adoption of zero trust architecture, secure cloud systems, and post-quantum cryptography. The strategy also calls for deploying AI-driven cybersecurity tools across federal networks to improve threat detection, continuous monitoring, and response. Procurement reforms are also proposed to allow agencies to adopt advanced cybersecurity technologies more quickly. The plan also prioritizes protection of critical infrastructure sectors such as energy, finance, telecommunications, healthcare, water utilities, and data centers. It calls for strengthening operational technology environments, securing supply chains, and reducing reliance on technology vendors from foreign adversaries. In addition, the strategy emphasizes maintaining U.S. leadership in emerging technologies, including AI and quantum computing, while investing in workforce development to expand cybersecurity talent through partnerships across government, academia, and industry. While the strategy outlines broad priorities, analysts noted that it lacks detailed implementation guidance. Observers describe the document as setting direction rather than defining public actions. With more detailed operational plans and agency guidance expected in the coming months, the strategy was released alongside a new executive order aimed at combating cybercrime and fraud targeting American families, businesses, and critical infrastructures. So, yeah, they're pointing in a direction, and from this surface, it doesn't sound like it's all horrible. I find it interesting that there's such a big emphasis on, like, taking the fight to the bad guys, as it were.
Yeah, Chris, this is so interesting. My first thought, as you mentioned, as a few folks have surfaced, is like, okay, now what? You know, I am keeping any political views out of this, but it first off, it feels like it was written by AI. Number one, there's a lot of use of in hyphens and I don't know,
m-dashes,
m-dashes, if you will, and, you know, two sentence paragraphs and stuff like that. And I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying it feels a lot like it was written by AI, because there's some parts here that are very AI heavy and laden, you know. And we will secure the AI stack and promote innovation, AI enabled, AI, agentic AI, particularly generative and agentic AI, AI, AI. It's all over the place.
I count four M dashes in that one paragraph.
Yeah. And it's just some of those things where I'm like, hey, what the heck? But on a very realistic, in a very realistic sense, I wish there was more action that came out of this. I think organizations that look to government policy and regulatory bodies and whatnot to figure out what to do and where to go next, I think they look for guidance. They look for specific actions. To when I first read this thing, to read it, that it was 4 pages long, because it's 7 pages total. 2 of them are the back and the cover, and then one of them is a letter from the president. There's 4 pages of actual content. 1, 2, 3, 4. And those are the pillars, and that's it. I would have liked to have seen more. Now, Chris, that doesn't mean this doesn't lay the foundation. We might see this tied into NIST in the future. We might see this tied into things that CISA has published. We might see it tied into cybersecurity frameworks and all sorts of stuff. It might just kind of be, as you mentioned, an update that focuses on bringing the fight to the adversary and whatnot. It's interesting that it does call out here, you know, galvanizing the role of state, local, tribal, and territorial authorities. I really like that, actually. Some of the things where it does identify critical defense or defense critical infrastructure, companies, energy grid, financial, telecom, so on and so forth. I like all those things being called out. I love the idea that it recognizes the government needs to be modernized. And I love the lean in for AI. I love the idea of everything that's here. I just would have liked to have seen more of a, and here's what we're going to do about it, mm-hmm. kind of a thing, right? And again, it's just an interesting, I think to me, it's just an interesting approach to basically publish like a dream state as opposed to the path to get there. I think we all recognize that, you know, we need to improve and that certain agencies need to get better policies in place, and cybersecurity as a whole needs to probably mature across the federal government and whatnot. And then it gets into, you know, calling out things such as like, and this one to me is slightly interesting, Chris, cybercrime and intellectual property theft are some of the greatest threats to global economies. And I'm like, but this is the US policy. Mm-hmm. You know, we will unleash the private sector by creating incentives to identify and disrupt adversary networks. Are we incentivizing offensive behavior against adversaries now?
Yeah, that's a little confusing, because I feel like the reason we don't do that is because there's no financial incentive.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is one of those things where it's like, huh, there's some interesting words being discussed here, and that might be why it's being passed as like ideas and words now. I'm not a policy person. I don't work for the federal government. I don't think any of this right now is necessarily like hard-coded advice as to what you must do, but I do find it relatively interesting going forward. It sounds good. It reads good.
Maybe you get to keep all the cryptocurrency from the bad guys you helped take down.
Maybe. I mean, that's the thing, is like, if I go and I steal an adversary's crypto wallet, do I get, I mean, not that I want any of it these days, right? But is it, can I keep the money that I take? Like, what's my opportunity there? You know what I mean? And nonetheless, hopefully anyone who's listening to this can tell my reaction to this is like, great, do it.
All right. So this next one is more to the opening statement I used with this episode.
Getting real.
Yeah, it's getting real. Iran has expanded the scope of potential targets in the ongoing conflict with Israel and the United States by identifying infrastructure tied to major American technology companies in the Middle East as legitimate targets, according to reports citing the IRGC-affiliated Tasnim News Agency. Iran released a list of what it calls new targets, including offices, cloud computing facilities, data centers, and development hubs connected to companies such as Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Nvidia, IBM, Oracle, and Palantir. These facilities are located in Israeli cities and several Gulf states, including the United Arab Emirates and potentially other regional locations. Iranian state media describe these technology assets as connected to systems used for military or strategic purposes, placing them within the scope of what Tehran considers valid targets as the conflict escalates. The shift signals a broadening of the conflict beyond conventional military infrastructure to include digital and cloud infrastructure operated by commercial technology firms. This development reflects an expansion of the battlefield into the technology sector, which has traditionally been viewed as less exposed to direct physical attacks during geopolitical conflicts. Earlier in the conflict, Iranian drone strikes reportedly hit several data centers operated by Amazon Web Services in the UAE and Bahrain. The strikes damaged facilities and forced them offline, resulting in service disruptions for cloud customers. The incidents raised concerns about the vulnerability of cloud infrastructure and large technology hubs operating in regions affected by geopolitical tensions. Technology companies operating in West Asia are now increasing security measures as risks grow. Industry groups have urged firms to strengthen cybersecurity defenses, including preparedness for distributed denial-of-service attacks and protecting sensitive data. Companies are also reviewing contingency plans, improving threat detection capabilities, and considering rerouting traffic to maintain operational resilience. The situation has also heightened concerns about AI-enabled threats, such as deepfakes and the potential targeting of critical data infrastructure as the conflict continues to evolve. So, I mean, I'm not surprised, but I'm a little bit shocked that we're here already. I mean, seeing all the drones and technology, the higher technology stuff go onto the battlefield, it does make sense that this stuff sort of becomes the bleeding edge of what's considered a military target. But
yeah,
it is kind of wild to be seeing it happening right now, and a little scary to think that like eventually these could be attacks on U.S. soil against these companies, you know, which I think would classify as soft targets.
I think we covered some of this in our last episode, Chris, and I'm actually surprised to see that it is still here. Not because I'm like, well, this shouldn't be possible, but because I view this as kind of like an ongoing concern. I think there's a lot of organizations out there and, you know, news agencies and things like that where people are very, very concerned about this happening. And they are very much thinking to themselves like, oh my gosh, you know, this is going to happen. This is a thing. The adversaries are going to do this. They're going to come after data centers. They're going to take this down. They're going to take that down. And it happens, and it's no longer just conjecture or possibilities anymore. It's actually like, oh, AWS got targeted as a result of this. Google Cloud might get targeted as a result of this. Meta, any other data center operator might get targeted as a result of this. And, I think it's, you know, to your point earlier, like it's getting real now. I think this is another example of it just getting real. They're recognizing that a lot of stuff these days that relies on, you know, I don't want to say AI, but like a lot of information technology these days relies on the cloud, relies on data centers, and you might be able to put a disruption in AWS services, which might be able to put a disruption in who knows what else.
Yeah.
And whatnot. And I wouldn't put it past the Iranian threat actors to also know maybe where there's some international presence, you know, maybe where there are some kind of regionally specific applications or tools being run. Or and Chris, I'm shooting from the hip here, hypothesizing, but maybe they know, hey, this particular data center houses certain pieces of data or certain applications, or we know it gets relied on. Or maybe they're just throwing darts against a dartboard and they're like, well, it's likely that everyone who's operating out of this area is probably routing through these data centers here, you know, and I'm not sure which approach they're taking. Probably maybe a combination of both. I don't think it's kind of like, well, that's an American company, so screw it. Let's blow up the data center. I think they look at it as these things are critical for modern enterprise operations. Maybe we can disrupt something somewhere. And that's it. And I look at it like I look at the opposite as being very true. I was over in Europe when the Amazon US East 1 outage happened back in October, and it was systemic. It was felt all throughout Europe and the world, and people were like, oh my gosh, this is down. Everyone was feeling it. And then for a moment, you kind of sit back and you're like, wait, that's just one region. And then you're like, there's a lot of stuff centralized in that one region. And that's what I think the threat actors realize is there's stuff centralized in these regions here. We can probably actually disrupt more than anyone might think.
Yeah. And I think if you look at like part of Iran's strategy is to like disrupt the economy because they know that's the biggest driver of, you know, whether the president gets to keep his job or not.
Yeah.
So if they can disrupt business and cause economic harm, I think that's where they're going to focus their efforts.
They're also keeping their foot on the gas when it comes to gas or oil prices as well. So they're definitely picking up on how can we impact some changes here.
I wonder if in the future we see a world where people start dropping off of LinkedIn to stay anonymous, you know, like if they start to, you know.
Already there.
Yeah.
Already there, I think. I've already run into some folks actually in the past couple of months, not necessarily in response to this, but just in general, who are like, I don't go on LinkedIn because there are things I want to keep private. And it's not like I don't want anybody to know. It's there are threat actors who will use this against me.
Yeah. Man. I like my LinkedIn profile.
Right, me too.
I spent a lot of time on it. Well, maybe it's just time to change my name.
There you go. There you go. No one's going to know. Just don't do it publicly here.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'll have like a meet space name, and then I'll have a digital name, and we'll never cross the streams.
There we go.
All right. The next one up, still getting real. Chinese linked threat actors have launched cyber attacks against organizations in Qatar shortly after the initial U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran, indicating a shift in regional targeting strategy. According to research from Checkpoint Software, at least two campaigns targeting Qatari entities were observed within days of the conflict escalating. The activity suggests that China Nexus advanced persistent threat groups are rapidly adapting their operations to exploit geopolitical developments and shifting intelligence priorities to the Middle East. One of the campaigns was attributed to the threat group known as Camaro Dragon. The attackers attempted to deploy a variant of the PlugX malware using lures tied to the ongoing conflict. The attack involved a malicious archive disguised as images of attacks on American military bases in
Bahrain.
Sorry, I'm doing my best here.
It's all good, man.
When executed, an LNK file triggered a lengthy infection chain that connected to a compromised server to retrieve additional payloads. The operation ultimately abused DLL hijacking of a legitimate Baidu net disk binary to install the PlugX backdoor. PlugX is a modular malware platform associated with multiple Chinese linked threat actors since at least 2008. Its plugin-based architecture allows attackers to perform various post-compromise actions, including remote command execution, file exfiltration, screen capture, and keystroke logging. Although the FBI previously announced the removal of PlugX from thousands of devices worldwide, its continued use in recent campaigns indicates that the malware remains active in threat actor operations. A separate campaign targeting Qatari organizations attempted to deploy the penetration testing framework Cobalt Strike. In this case, the attackers used a password-protected archive titled Strike at Gulf Oil and Gas Facilities.zip, which was likely delivered through email. The archive ultimately delivered Cobalt Strike for network reconnaissance and additional malicious activities. The campaign also used low-quality AI-generated lures impersonating the Israeli government and deployed a previously unseen Rust-based loader that exploited DLL hijacking of ADLL, a component of the open-source NVIDIA screen reader. Security researchers noted that Chinese threat actors typically focus on other areas of the Middle East rather than the Gulf region, making the targeting of Qatar unusual. The rapid pivot in activity highlights how quickly espionage groups can adjust their targeting priorities in response to global events. Researchers suggested that Qatar's position at the intersection of multiple regional and global interests may make it a valuable intelligence target during this current crisis. To mitigate risks from escalating cyber activity, security experts recommend strengthening endpoint detection and response system, enforcing multi-factor authentication, and maintaining strong baseline security practices. I really got to cut those out of the notes. I mean, if you listen to more than one episode, you should know those by now.
They're good notes. I tell you what, Chris, this article was all over the place. DLL hijacking, PlugX, Voldemort, Philippines, Myanmar, Iran, Qatar, Checkpoint. Pick a word. It showed up in here. This is probably the biggest curveball that we'll have today. I didn't expect to see this, to be honest with you. I didn't expect to see that China Nexus threat actors would start to use this as a lure to target Middle Eastern entities, going after Qatar and whatnot, using the Iranian conflict as a way in. I found to be pretty interesting, signaling a shift, as the article calls out, for China-backed APT groups as they pivot in response, but going actually after countries that are in the region. And I view this, I akin this a lot to something you and I have talked about before, which is when the Russia-Ukrainian conflict started, they were, Russian threat actors were using like Ukrainian newsletters as ways, as lures, as phishing emails to get into like surrounding nations and stuff like that. And very, very similar to what we had talked about before. It's a fascinating world out there. Obviously, if you're in that part of the world, you're going to click and open these emails a lot more than you might usually be used to and whatnot. This comes to us from the folks at Checkpoint who have called this out here. At least two separate threat actors targeting entities in Qatar using conflict-related lures. I think that component right there, Chris, is always present. An adversary utilizing hot topics, big news, or something to use as a lure or a drive-by download or a click or something like that. Then once it gets in there, and folks looking at this from a true blue team slash defensive perspective here, it's an LNK file, a link file that kicks off an archive that pulls down an infection change that ultimately leads to Cobalt Strike and whatnot. And it's like, oh, got it. Cool. All the usual suspects that we're used to seeing before. PlugX has been around since 2008. I cut my teeth on PlugX way back.
Cobalt Strike? Come on.
Cobalt Strike been around for a while. Yeah. So point being, folks, defenders, your big takeaway here is user education. If you're in parts of the world that are suffering geopolitical conflicts, but you're not in the country involved in the geopolitical conflict, which means you are adjacent to them, it's going to be a hot topic. Educate your users, right? Educate your users. Hey, adversaries like to use modern events as lures, so watch out. Whether or not where the adversaries come from doesn't really matter. I wouldn't give some sort of user education that says, and the Chinese Nexus threat actors are doing this, and Russian Nexus threat actors doing that. I would instead say, here's the things to watch out for, because it's right now the magnifying glass in this article is on these Nexus groups. It can change easily, because anyone right now can get higher click rates by focusing on current events, especially in sentimental nations.
Yeah.
And that's always going to be present. So one of the odd things that I tell folks about whenever a geopolitical conflict erupts, obviously the countries involved are trading cyber, you know, conflict back and forth, but it's the adjacent and the involved nations who fall victim to the drive-bys and to the phishing lures and the, you know, random one-off malware and whatnot. And while there's a lot of chaos over there, you get a couple C2s implanted over here.
I was going to say, I think, like, who knows what the ultimate motivation is, but there's like a really good chance it is just opportunistic, that they know people are more likely to be susceptible to this stuff right now. So let's go see if we can get some stuff installed while everybody's worried about what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we've seen that happen. And I think it's going to continue. It's going to be a thing. A conflict erupts. You're going to see these types of things happen. I guarantee you in the next few weeks, we're probably going to be talking about this type of thing again. And I bet you it's going to be focused on journalists and dissidents, because that's usually where we see it happen as well. You and I have been doing this long enough now. This is where we see it.
This last one, I wish I had done an update before we talked, because I think I originally got these notes like yesterday when this attack first took place or when it was first reported. But I've been hearing crazy things about it. So let's go through this and then we'll get to what the gossip is. An Iranian-linked hacking group has claimed responsibility for a cyber attack on U.S.-based medical equipment manufacturer Stryker, which disrupted the company's technology operations across its global offices. The attack reportedly prevented thousands of employees from accessing internal systems, forcing the company to temporarily shut down part of its technology infrastructure. Employees were also instructed not to log into company computers or connect to Stryker mobile applications while the organization worked to contain the incident. The hacking group Handala, which has previously claimed cyber operations targeting Israel, said on social media that the attack was retaliation for what it describes as a brutal attack on the Minab school and ongoing cyber operations against what it calls the Axis of Resistance. According to employee accounts, a message attributed to the group appeared when some workers opened their browsers, indicating the attackers had compromised internal systems. Reports indicate that remote devices running Microsoft Windows, including laptops and mobile phones connected to Stryker systems, were wiped during the incident. The disruption affected the company's global workforce and operations. Stryker, headquartered in Kalamazoo, Michigan, develops medical technology products in areas including MedSurg, neurotechnology, and orthopedics, and operates in more than 60 countries with over 56,000 employees. A company spokesperson said Stryker is actively working to restore systems and resume normal operations, noting that business continuity plans have been activated to continue serving customers. The attack occurred amid escalating geopolitical tensions following the joint U.S.-Israeli military operation against Iran. U.S. officials have highlighted the growing role of cyber operations in the conflict. FBI Director Kash Patel stated that the Bureau is working continuously to counter cyber threats as part of the broader cyber strategy for America, which aims to impose costs on adversaries targeting U.S. organizations in cyberspace. Over the past decade, Iran has significantly expanded its cyber capabilities, building units within the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and the Ministry of Intelligence and Security, while also working with proxy hacker groups. Iranian cyber activity has evolved from espionage and influence campaigns to disruptive attacks, including the 2012 Shamoon attack on Saudi Aramco and previous cyber operations targeting U.S. financial institutions. So yeah, this article did cover a lot of what I heard, but I've heard from a few people that like the amount of bricked devices that were produced in this attack is staggering. And I just really wonder how good that business continuity plan is if all your employees' phones and laptop computers have been bricked.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, number one, we've got experience that Iranian Nexus threat actors have destructive capabilities, if you will, right? Saudi Aramco, Shamoon, and everything like that. These are destructive style attacks that shouldn't catch anybody off guard, number one. Number two, you know, the tough part here is how do you pick the target, Chris, right?
Yeah.
How do you pick the target? How do you decide who to go after? And then subsequently, how do you decide who to defend? I mean, defend everyone, of course, but like everyone. And this is, I think, one of the tough parts in this situation here. Stryker has come through and has said that, you know, they might have impact at hospitals. They're having brick devices, low-level defacement, denial of service attacks. All sorts of stuff. And then it comes down to, and this is just me reading the article here, Stryker has received sizable contracts with the military for hospital equipment and surgical supplies. So like, now I have to ask, okay, but you know, it's a near $1 trillion budget. Like, does that mean everyone who's a contractor gets hit? Did this vendor do a particular thing? Like, you know, how does that work?
And I'm sure there's an intersection between vulnerable, versus, you know, yeah.
And is it company size? You know, is it kind of like part of the defense industrial base that then gets them targeted based on company size or something like that? And as tough as it is to say, Chris, if you operate in a space, this goes back to our previous article here. If you operate in a space where you are very closely tied to a, you know, military conflict or something that's happening, you fall within the crosshairs. Mm-hmm. You fall within the crosshairs as well, unfortunately, and you don't get to decide what type of attacks you fall under. Kinetically, you're not going to get hit. They're not going to go after your headquarters and your office and stuff like that. They'll just shut down your network. And I think it's more far-reaching. You know, it's kind of like, hey, you work with this country that's launching attacks against us. We're going to take down your entire network and brick all of your devices. And that's our level of response. Why? Because the level of effort to take down 10,000 systems is nominal compared to the level of effort it is to take down two systems, Chris. It's literally just wash, rinse, and repeat, four I in loop, go. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think threat actors are recognizing and realizing like, hey, to your point earlier about economic base damage and whatnot, they're like, we don't even need to be in the country to cause damage here. We can just hack our way in. So blue teamers, defenders, if you find yourself in the defense industrial base, shore up your defenses, because guess what? You are now on the list. I mean, you may have always been on the list for IP style theft attacks and whatnot, but now you're on the list for disruptive attacks too, if you didn't know before.
I don't want to be a dark prophet here, and I absolutely hope I'm wrong, but I would disagree with your statement that like kinetic action isn't coming, because as things ramp up, like, I mean, you look at how absurd everything is right now.
Yeah.
You know, is somebody pushed into a corner like that? If they have that capability, it would definitely strike deep in the hearts of folks working in these industries and stuff. So I hope I'm wrong, but I definitely could see a kinetic attack on one of these companies, even on American soil, in the next couple of years.
Let's hope not, but I am with you. It might happen. And I would say all allies fall into that category too, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I miss like the early 2000s. Even then, I guess it was already sideways. Let's say the late 90s. Can I just go back to being 17 or 18 again and rolling around on my skateboard?
Yeah, I, you know, it's funny. Sometimes in my head, I segment stuff like before COVID and after COVID. And now I'm starting to do exactly what you did, which is I'm starting to segment things with like, you know, pre-widespread technology and post-widespread technology. And
it was just
like, remember the simpler days where like, you know, Chris, it's funny. You and I both work every single day in technology. We're here because of technology. So for us to say, remember when there was less technology? But do you remember when there was less technology?
I remember moving from a tape Walkman to a CD Walkman and being upset because I couldn't skateboard with it because after about 30 seconds, it ran out of buffer and the CD would start skipping. Like, that's the level of technology I think we peaked at.
I remember, to your point, and I was going to say this before you mentioned it, shopping for portable CD players, Discmans, if you will, based on how much buffer they had built
That's
in.
That's right, yeah.
And yeah, it was like, how far ahead can they read? And I remember those. I remember having MP3 players when they first came out. We're still talking early 2000s, not iPad.
I had a 128 megabyte MP3 player at the beginning.
That's all you needed. That was enough music for a day. And you would, you know, curate it and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. It was just a file system too. You plugged in and it showed up like a drive. You just dragged your LimeWire files over to your, man, we're like the two old guys yelling at the young kids now.
Well, we're not here saying Telnet's better than anything else. I mean, we've got a little bit of youth to our words here, but we are asking for, you know, punk rock and flip phones to come back. I feel like it was much better back then.
I feel like the world could use some more punk rock.
It could. And a few more Motorola Razors that do nothing but make phone calls.
All right. I might have one of those in a drawer somewhere. I'll see if I can find it and bring it to the next show. I wonder if they take the little SIM cards too.
You know what? I don't know. I think SIM cards as a technology hadn't changed much.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, we'll give it the old college try. See what happens.
There we go.
All right, man. Always a pleasure, sir.
Likewise.
See you again next week.
Great seeing you, Chris. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
And that brings us to the end of another Intel Chat. You can support this show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend or subscribing and giving us a rating or leaving a comment on your chosen podcast platform. If you want to be part of the conversation and access the intel we talk about in real time, you can join our community forum at community.limacharlie.io. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you on the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.